Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host of Women Who Lead. And with me today, I'm very delighted to introduce you to Maria Teckler. And Maria is the president of Superb Communication. More than that, of what you should know about Maria is that not only is she a best-selling author, she was one of our nominees for our Women of Influence Awards this year, which we were so excited about that, Maria. And she's also the author of Bridge Builders. And we're going to talk about her book, that's Bridge Builders, Five Communicator Principles for Leadership. So, Maria, welcome to our show, and please say hello to our listening audience.
Thank you, Michelle, so much for having me in this show. I am truly privileged to talk to you and to be able to bring some value to your listening audience.
Well, thank you, Maria, because we were talking right before the show, and I said I'm intrigued, I'm into your book, and, you know, what a great concept as far as, you know, the communication side, I'm calling it a bridge builder. And I would love to hear, just as a kickoff, can you share, you know, with our listeners just a little bit about what is a bridge builder? Because I really love that concept when it comes to communication and what a bridge stands for in relation to your book.
Yes, absolutely. I think the whole idea of bridge builder is a very concrete metaphor. Immediately, we understand that someone that builds bridges, you know, has a vision to overcome a particular obstacle in order to get or connect to the other side. And of course, Michelle, you and I live in San Diego, and I often think of the Coronado Bridge, which is my favorite bridge to cross because I feel like I'm on vacation when I get to the other side.
I love that bridge. I'm with you.
Isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
I came to San Diego about 12 years ago, and I thought, man, you know, what a cool bridge. It's curved. It's 80 degrees curved. And I always think, you know, why did they build this bridge in a curved shape? And so when we think of a bridge builder, I mean, they're not only looking at, you know, what is the span that they want to, you know, overcome, but they're looking at all the obstacles that keeps us from connecting to the other side. And of course, for those of us who live in San Diego know that Navy ships have to have access to that bay, and they needed to have a certain span, and they needed to be able to have clearance. And so a bridge builder really looks at all the obstacles, looks at where we want to go, and then devises a way to overcome those obstacles so that we can connect to the other side or where we want to go. So
that's
just a concrete sense, that's what a true bridge builder is. Of course, in leadership is the same thing. Whatever we want to achieve, whoever we want to influence, requires for us to overcome a number of obstacles. Oftentimes those obstacles are misconceptions or judgments or the baggage that we bring into the relationship. And a bridge builder is intentional to keep those in mind and find ways to really reach the other person's heart and mind so that we can find common ground and be able to have great influence and impact.
I like that. And, you know, one of the things is for our listeners, Maria, it's like, what do you feel, you know, because I think all of us are like, oh, I communicate, I'm a good communicator, or we know that maybe that's an area for us to improve. But for our listeners, what are some of the things that you see are the biggest challenges that hold people back from being, you know, this great communicator? I mean, I know there's studies and things from like how fabulous Ronald Reagan was and, you know, the whole great communicator thing. But what do you see that holds people back the most in business predominantly, if you wouldn't mind sharing a few things?
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course, we have, you know, the basics, you know, such as listening is always a big barrier. Most of us do not listen well. We listen with the intent to respond rather than to understand the other person. I mean, communication is I would say most of it is listening and understanding the other person. But at a more at a deeper level, what I see is that the barrier to great communication and connection is our apprehension to be authentic. We walk around, you know, many times wearing a mask or an armor because we want to show that we're competent, that we're credible, that we belong in the room. And oftentimes we're not bringing our authentic voice, our authentic self. And it's very hard to connect at a true level if we are pretending to be someone else, to try to be someone we think other people want us to be. And when you don't have authenticity in the communication process or the relationship process, you know, everything may seem okay, you know, for a while, but over time, we get tired of carrying that armor, and the true person is going to show up, and it's going to cause some problems. So being authentic is key, absolutely, to great communication.
I love that. And I mean, is there an example you can give us? I mean, I think of in business, well, first of all, I love where you said we communicate with the intent to kind of like respond as opposed to really listening and understand the other person before we do. And I have to admit, I'm raising my hand. I'm one of those talkies that I probably need to listen more effectively in my communication. But what's an example where you're saying the authenticity is missing? Because I think that's interesting, but I'd love to hear kind of like a story around that. Where mm-hmm. Help me.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. I was hired by a large company to come in and do executive coaching for one of their executives. And they, you know, the person that brought me in wanted to groom this woman for a higher level of leadership. And the reason that the team felt that she needed some coaching is because there was something that they didn't know exactly what it was, but it was turning people off. She was extremely competent at her work. She was brilliant in her systems and everything that she brought to the company. But when it came to influencing others and getting in front of an audience and delivering a presentation, for example, there was something that wasn't quite working. So when I began to work with her, what I discovered is that she felt insecure about working in a male-dominated environment, and she felt that she needed to almost assume a particular persona to be credible. And what happened right. is that she wasn't really being herself. She wasn't actually tapping into her power and her ability to really command the attention of the room by being her very best self. And that's what I see a lot, that we want the outcome. We want the influence. We want to have the credibility. And sometimes we don't feel that the real person inside us is enough. And so we create, you know, almost like this persona that we think people want. But when we're not authentic, people may not know it, but there's something that they don't quite trust. There's something that they can't quite put their finger on, but they begin to sense that this is not someone that they can fully trust. And so that would be a great example. Of course, once we were able to tap into who she was and she was able to trust that part of her, oh my goodness, you know, she began to get tremendous feedback. You know, people would stop her in the hallway and say, my goodness, you know, what you did in that boardroom was amazing. I don't know what's going on, but you are really bringing
it. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great story, and I think authenticity is a big one. You know, and when you know, I'm kind of curious, Maria, for you, when you go into companies, you know, is it usually the organization that brings you in and says we're having challenges with this or this, or what is trigger point or situations where you're usually brought in to serve, and what's going on in the company that says we need you under this umbrella for communication?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the work that I'm doing right now, it really involves creating movements inside organizations. And it usually starts with one person. You know, many times we see companies that know that better communication or leadership is good for the company, But many leaders make the mistake of bringing someone like me and saying, okay, now go and fix these people. And they sit, they stay outside of the loop of learning. And it doesn't work. It becomes a very costly investment because people follow the leader. They want to know that the person who's carrying the vision is buying into what they're learning. And so what I'm doing right now with companies, with some pretty amazing companies I'm working with, is that the leadership is recognizing that they need to change the culture that starts with the person at the top. And if that person becomes the main bridge builder, if you will, then everybody begins to feel the change and everybody begins to embrace the change. And then it truly, it becomes like a virus that spreads. That's how movements
work. A good
work.
Virus. A good virus that spreads, right?
A good virus.
A good virus.
Absolutely.
That's pretty good. Well, I do like that. And it is interesting. You know, I would love for you to comment just a little bit on what you see as far as communication challenges among, you know, there's so many conversations about the different generations now in the workplace and just how different it is for, let's say, the millennials versus some of the different generations and how they interact and communicate. And there's a little bit of, you know, I don't want to say friction, that's the wrong word, but just challenges, you know. I mean, when I'm interacting with the 20-something, you know, for me, I'm like, let's get together face-to-face, let's have a conversation, and they're like, you know, no, I'll just text you, right? So it's just, there's a flat communication that you lose from that relationship side. I'm kind of curious what you see with the different generations as it relates to communication.
Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely there's a change, there's a different perspective on communication, but what I am finding is that sometimes actually what gets in the way is the assumptions and the misconceptions. For example, you know, that the younger generation, millennials, prefer texting or electronic communication versus face-to-face communication. It's actually a misconception in the sense that, of course, they're very well-versed with that level of communication, but they're very hungry for face-to-face communication. The problem is that most people already come to the conversation with that assumption that they are not welcoming that level of communication, and so that creates a barrier. Or they don't know how to facilitate the conversation. And so understanding where different generational pools come in is so important. Now, one perfect example on a resource that is not mine, but I used it as a research when I was writing my book, cultures such as Google, for example. They have a whole mindset about the power of what they call the smart creative. And that is a breed of employees that brings tremendous technical savvy, but they are very entrepreneurial and they are very creative. And there's a way in which they prefer to communicate and operate and be served. And when we get to know our audience, which is really, you know, I mean, you know this because obviously you're very in tune with your audience, your listening audience. When we do a presentation, we need to know what our audience needs and wants. It's the same thing. It's about intentionally stepping into their shoes with empathy so that we can really connect with their heart.
I love the heart part. And I know when we delve into your book, or it sounds like, you know, from what we prepped on with the call today, it's like you kind of center in on 5 communication principles. And I'm kind of curious if you can share a few of them with our listeners. And, you know, especially since most of them are women, it's like, do you find that there's any, I mean, back to the principles, but do you find there's any difference for how women communicate versus how men communicate, or men with women, or anything related to more gender communication differences, or is it communication strategies are the same no matter gender or age or any of that?
Mm-hmm. You know, I try to pull out from the book, you know, the references to gender per se. However, we can still be very cognizant of what the other gender needs if we just focus on who our audience is. You know, I know that you've been reading the book, and you'll see that the book really starts with a parable or a story in which the woman is the quote-unquote bridge builder. But here's the deal, that sometimes we just put women and men in the same buckets, or that, you know, there are unique buckets, and we make a mistake when addressing them just in terms of generalizing who they are. I'll give you an example. My husband and I, you know, oftentimes communicate very differently than the gender roles dictate. I tend to think more like a man because I am very driven. I am a type A personality. And he tends to communicate more, you know, in the feminine side, where he just really is very romantic and he wants to chat a lot. And sometimes I just, you know, I'm very focused. So when if people look at me as just the feminine gender, they're going to miss out, because they have already labeled me based on what they think I should be. But if people focus more on the audience itself, you know, in terms of if you're looking for audience, let's say in terms of their buying behaviors, well, that's, you know, that's an aspiration, or that's something that transcends female or male. If you look at the audience based on their level of ambition, then that's more important, because, you know, if they have an ambition to move up in the company, they want to, you know, grow initiatives. They want to change the world. You see what I mean? And so I try to address it based on factors that will keep us from really missing the mark based on labels.
I like that. And I know in your book, you do talk about how, you know, with this bridge builder communication strategy that you have, you know, it's about getting what you want. I mean, and I love that, you know, kind of aspect of it, because I think many times we're communicating, you know, we're either looking to persuade, or it's like we want to influence, or we want something, you know, and I know a lot of people don't believe they're selling, but I'm like, we're always selling ourselves or trying to get what we want. So can you share a little bit of how that works, you know, under some of your principles, because I think that's really at the center core of the reason why so many of us should really tweak and get better about how we strive to communicate, right? Because it's all about getting what you want, and if I can say, just like you said, in an authentic way, right? This isn't about manipulation or anything like that, but, you know, communication at the heart of it, you know, the more you can be a better communicator, it really does open doors and things will come your way a little more. I mean, that's right. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid you're offering, Maria. I love it, because I think there is something there to it. But, you know, what are some of the things that you have on that? Because I think, again, just the idea of a better communicator, you're going to get more about, you know, what you want in business and life. And that's kind of the center part of your book.
Yes. No, I think a lot of the times we don't stop to think, what is it that we really want? Now, before we can put our finger on what we want, we need to know what we don't want. And so when I'm working with executives or teams, we spend quite a bit of time thinking in terms of, what is it that you don't want anymore? When you're able to fill, you know, a whole page of things you don't want anymore, then what you want is more crystallized. And it opens up your mind to then adopt the principles, which are very simple. I mean, they're as simple as think like a bridge builder, listen like a bridge builder, act like a bridge builder, talk like a bridge builder, and lead like a bridge builder. And then, of course, under those five principles are very specific best practices. But if you know, for example, that you want to influence the board of directors to say yes to a particular initiative, then you are going to spend more time thinking, how can I overcome their misconceptions or their preconceived ideas? How can I overcome their objections about cost or about the potential risks to the company? And so I begin to now see how that desire, you know, can get me closer to what I want in terms of me facilitating a path for the other person who is going to open the door for me to really meet me halfway. And
so cool. And
I believe me, even, yeah. But what I was going to say is that even though there's five principles, 90% of the work is the first one. Because if you get the first one right, the other ones just seem to follow. And the first one is really think like a bridge builder. If you are able to say, I am a bridge builder, I am building bridges to the people that can open doors for me, then everything else is going to be easy. You're going to act differently. You're going to respond differently. You're going to talk differently. You're going to listen differently, right?
Yeah, I like that. Well, and I'm curious with you, what prompted you? I mean, what was it that was the spark for you that said, I'm going to package all of this great information and I'm going to put it in a book?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We all have a book in us, right? But
that's right.
This has been a project I've been putting off for a long time. I think it was the book that would not let me go, if you will. I actually was born in Mexico City, and I moved to the States when I was 16. I didn't speak any English, and my father had died when I was 12. And so I had come with a lot of dreams and hopes that had been, really squashed by a lot of the circumstances, thinking that I would never be able to have my dreams, because how could I do that if I can't speak the language? I don't think I'll be able to master it. And so for many years, I felt very disconnected from both my dreams and other people. And, you know, I began to remember some of the principles my dad left me before he died. And I began to connect those dots and understanding, particularly that he used to say to me, we used to play chess when I was six. And he, every time that I wanted to quit, I know, he was so great. It was not six-year-old chess. He would pull the books and he would teach me all the tactics. He was so cool. And that every time that I would lose most of my pieces and I wanted to quit, he would always say, okay, one pivot move can change the momentum of the game. And he would show me that just one little move could change truly the momentum of that game. And of course, I didn't know that that would become a life principle for me. And as I began to explore what is the move that can change everything for my life, what is the one move that I can master, that I can repeat over and over and over again, that will yield amazing results. And the more I thought about it, I realized that that move was to see myself as a bridge builder, as someone that regardless of the obstacles before me, I could find a way to span over them, that I could overcome them. I may not be able to remove the obstacle, but I could build a bridge over it. And finally, that just became the message that I needed to share. And then, of course, having lost my dad when I was 12, I've always been very reverent of time, knowing that I only have today. So I decided if I have only one book in me, what is the book that I would want to leave my daughter? And so it was this book. And it needed to be a story, because we know that story is the one bridge that connects us to people's hearts.
You know, I'm inspired by that, because even as you're talking, I had no idea. I mean, you know, English is your second language. That's amazing to me that this is the lane you kind of fell in as a specialty, which is communication, and then the whole concept. Because I think, you know, I was a communications major in school, Maria, and, you know, for our listeners, I cracked up because, you know, everything about communication, when you look at the visual you have about being a bridge builder, it's like you can't go wrong with that, because being a bridge builder means you go back and forth and you are interacting and relating. So well done with that, because I'm just, you know, I'm about halfway through your book, Honest Admission, and I love how you start with the parable. So I'm curious, in your book, what made you start with kind of this parable and the story at the beginning, as opposed to just jumping in like most business books do on how to do what you're talking about? It was a great way to, you know, kind of just stand out a little differently in your book. I liked it. What made you go that route?
Yeah. It became the vehicle through which I thought my audience will be served better. I have to confess that I wrote 2/3 of that book twice, and it was not a story, because I am not naturally a fiction writer. It's, you know, I feel that I'm a good writer, but it's not an easy process for me. It takes me a long time. It takes me a long time to write a whole paragraph or even a good sentence. And so I didn't want to work that hard, to be honest with you. So I thought maybe I can just write 52 tips to be a bridge builder, and then people could read one a week for a whole year. And I finally decided that not writing a story would be a disservice to my audience, and ultimately, you know, to the one person that I would hope that that book would make a difference, and that's my family, my daughter. So I decided, okay, I give up. I'm going to write this book, and I'm just going to take one step at a time. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done because I wanted it to resonate with people and I wanted them to see in the story. And so just being able to hear now from people that say, oh my gosh, I read the book and I cried, or I was at this part and I knew you were talking to me. It's such an amazing gift to be able to touch people at that level. And it's just become a life work, and I'm blessed truly to be able to have the privilege to connect with people at that level.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me when you hear the reason behind somebody's purpose on what they do, and that very much touched at the heart. And I see now why, you know, you were nominated for the Breaking Barriers Award, you know, and just from the center focus of how you wanted your daughter to be proud. That's pretty cool. And a great book. And I want to make sure, Maria, that for any of our listeners, if they're interested in getting the book, I know it's available on Amazon, but can you share if people want to connect with you and have interaction or ask questions, how would you like people to reach you and then tell them how to get the book as well?
Sure, absolutely. The book is on Amazon, so they can get it directly from there. If they are interested in bringing the book to their organization and they want to have a bulk order, then the best way is to connect with me, and I am able to obviously get it to them for, you know, a discount. And so my website, if they want to connect with me and they want to specifically find out if this is a good fit for their company, the best way is to go to mariakechler.com/strategy, because I invite people to apply for a strategy session where they can talk to me specifically about how they can bring this philosophy into their culture, because it can make a huge difference. And so I have set some time aside specifically for your listeners on my calendar. And so when they go there, they'll be able to look at my calendar and schedule a call with me.
Perfect, perfect. So, and I want all of our listeners to know I've been enjoying the book, and like I said, just the different, you know, tips and strategies. And, you know, one of them I know you talk about, and I'm going to encourage everybody to get the book because we don't have enough time to talk about it, is how to listen with your eyes. And I'm like, fascinating stuff, you know. Maria, I have one final question for you before we wrap up. And, you know, one of the things I always like our listeners to know is, you know, here we've been sharing some of your tips and your techniques, but what, you know, where is your future? You know, what do you see as kind of the roadmap for you in the next year? I mean, do you have another book inside you, or are you looking to, you know, kind of like write on this book and travel the country, or where are you going in the future for your big, hairy, audacious goals?
Oh, I love that. Yes. We're getting ready to launch in a bigger way. It's called the Bridge Builder Way, which is a curriculum that I've been testing inside organizations, where we take the curriculum and we create a movement from inside out. And so my big dream is to find, you know, literally organizations all over the world that will adopt the Bridge Builder Way. And my dream is that relationships will be changed, that not only internally at work, because they will take those same principles to their marriages, to their relationship with their kids, and it will revolutionize every single relationship they have. And so that's my dream. And then in terms of another book, that was such a hard work that I didn't think I would write another one for many years. But actually, based on the feedback and the actual testimonials from companies and leaders, I am actually beginning to capture them, and I'm hoping the next year we will see a copy of The Bridge Builder Way, which is a more of a interviewing companies and leaders that have adopted this philosophy and that are making tremendous movement in what they want to do.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we're going to leave on that highlight. So I want to say thank you for being on our show. You were an amazing leading lady today. And I've always want to say thank you to our listeners. We love your loyalty and our national reach. And I am happy to share that our leading lady next week is going to be a woman that I have known for quite a few while here in San Diego. And her name is Delinda Forsythe. She's the CEO and founder of Innovative Commercial Environments. And our topic is going to be Know Your Why, how to invest in your company's legacy, which I think will be a fascinating topic. So, Maria, thank you again. To all of our listeners, have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
We will see you next Friday. And as I always like to say, if you are a professional woman, please make an effort to support one another. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.